Oh, baby. That's right. Welcome in a first up for this Monday morning. Hope you had a great weekend. Let's just hope it was comparable to the Toronto Maple Leafs, who cannot lose. Every game they suit up for, they rack up the W's, and that was applicable again last night, sweeping the California trip.
Bang!
18-4. 18-4 combined score over the three games. And Coco, I saw the J word used last night with regards to the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know what the J word is in the NHL?
No, it's too early in the morning for me to think. Fill me in.
Juggernaut. Juggernaut. I believe it was Pierre LeBrun, our TSN hockey insider, used the J word.
Wow.
And that is a bad omen because I think it was Chris Johnston last year who used the J word with regards to the Montreal Canadiens. Then they lost like 15 of their next 18. But I can't see that happening, to quote Al's brother, with the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are just blowing the doors off teams night after night. They have now 33 points tied for the NHL lead, and they've won 14 of 16 games. A preposterous run for the blue and white.
Hey, hell of a weekend. You know, we kick off the show with some California love. Man, it was more than love that the Maple Leafs were sharing over this California road trip, because they steamrolled through California, and they did it in impressive fashion. Wow, this team is on quite a roll right now. You talked about the streak that they're on, and seven straight road wins after starting the season 0-3. And just doing it in really compressive fashion. A very consistent approach to their team, getting contributions from, you know, all four lines, all six defensemen, no matter who's playing, who's coming in and out of the lineup. You know, there's a real confidence with this group right now that they just feel like they can't be beat. And I tell you what, I'm on this group chat with a bunch of Leaf diehards with a couple of my buddies. And just the outpour of compliments yesterday about this Leafs team, and saying, you know, this goes to prove all the naysayers, all the critics, you know, that were bashing this team early on in the season. And I was like, guys, relax, okay? Relax a little bit. They're playing really well. This team is full of confidence right now because, one, they are very well coached. Credit to Sheldon Keefe. He's done a masterful job with this group since he's taken over, and even especially early on in the season. But they're getting amazing goaltending.
Every
night.
And
when you get amazing goaltending in this league, all it does is it just raises the confidence level of everybody else in front of them. And that's exactly what you're seeing with the Maple Leafs. You want to hear about streaks? Shout out to Jason Spezza playing his 1,200th career game last night. Forza, Jason Spezza. Matthews, three-game goal streak. We all, you know, talked
even
about his
strength goals.
Even
too.
Strength goal streak. Even gave a nice shot to Gord Miller on the interview.
We'll play that a little bit later.
Michael Bunting. Talk about a guy who's found a nice fit on that top line besides Matthews and Marner. 7 points in his last eight games. Simmons. Three-game point streak. You know, we talked about, you know, the pressures that Nick Ritchie is feeling and some of the noise of other guys potentially coming in and Mikheyev being ready and the acquisition of Clifford. Well, hey, look what that fourth line is doing right now. They are hearing the noise and they are finding a way to be contributing factors. William Nylander, three-game point streak, 2 goals, 3 assists. Same with Tavares. Like, you can go on and on with this group. There is just so much to like, and maybe it was the California sun, whatever it was, but something is you know, there's a right recipe right now that's being cooked with this group, and it's fun to see. It's great to witness, and let's keep it going.
Yeah, no, exactly, and you'll always have the naysayers, and I'm surprised your group chat is so positive. Like, nobody in my group chats care. They don't, because they've been, they've been believers so many times before, and they've had their heart broken so many times before. And I think until April, you know, it's gonna take a lot more than a couple wins over Anaheim and the LA Kings and whatever to really change the hearts and minds of so many Leaf fans. And I think that's totally fair. But what's also fair is to consider the way that the team is playing right now. Mm-hmm. The J word, the juggernaut word, is absolutely appropriate. For now, whether that translates to playoff success. I mean, listen, that's a far way ways away, and I think it's a conversation that is a little bit premature, but I think it's pretty obvious to me that this team is playing differently than they used to play last year, the years prior, and yeah, they have an unbelievable goaltender in Jack Campbell. I mean, this
guy, not just that. They found the new guy too, Joseph Wall.
I mean, no, he looked really good on Friday night as well. You know? That's indisputable. It's a machine right now. Really is. They are firing on all cylinders. I think my favorite stat that emerged last night is that Michael Bunting has more even strength points than Zach Hyman does. And
we're gonna go here now.
It's just everything is perfect. Everything is just working on another level for this team. And just imagine what was going on that flight home last night. They don't play again till Wednesday at home against Colorado. Yeah. It must have been a green light special on that flight. The bottles of Hennessy were flowing for the Toronto Maple Leafs on that charter. Can you imagine?
I'm curious to know if they actually jumped on the charter or they jumped on the Bieber bus and just gave it one last crack in L.A. before they left.
That's a good point. Good point. Right?
But look, I think we heard it all along, especially after going into their game against L.A., that the Maple Leafs used this road trip as they took a business approach to it. Well, hey, man, give them a lot of credit because they went in and they took care of business. A tough stretch to even, you know, come out with 3 out of 6 points, and they found a way to come out with 6 out of 6 points and doing it in dominant fashion. 6-2 over LA, 4-1 over San Jose, 5-1 over Anaheim, and it's just been, I mean, I'm not going to lie, it's been worth the late nights staying up to watch because they've made it worth your while with, you know, the impressive play that they're continuing to show with. It's like I said, it's the word consistency that really catches your eye and catches your ears when you sit down and talk about this group. So great time to be a Leafs fan. But look, you mentioned what your buddies are like. I'm the same way. And, you know, I'll compliment them. I'll join along for the ride, but I'm not going to get too overly excited because, you know, it's still a regular season, but they're doing what they need to do in the regular season to put themselves in a position. Right now, we're talking about the quarter point of the season. Right now, they've done everything that they needed to do to legitimize themselves and, you know, start legitimizing the season. So a lot of credit should be given to the Maple Leafs because it's well-deserved.
We will throw it a Poliakovo. Hey, Leafs fans, are you starting to believe? And I'd be curious to know their responses. My guess is the answer is still no. I don't think anything that could transpire over the course of this regular season will cause even the most ardent supporter of the Leafs to actually change their point of view, because the best indicator of the future is the past, and that is why it's just difficult to buy in right now. And call me a cynic, but I don't want to pour cold water on anything, because there shouldn't be any cold water poured on anything. The Leafs have been incredible, and I do believe this is a different team. But talk to me in April. That is a very common sentiment, and we'll see what the Twitter audience, how they perceive this conversation. But no doubt, the Leafs finished November 12-2-0, the winningest. It's a tough word to say, winningest. Month winningest. In franchise, stupid word.
Yes,
it is. Most wins in franchise history. No other team in the NHL can win more than 10 games this month. The last time Toronto had the outright most wins in one calendar month was October of 1993. So the month of November, what a month it was for Toronto. Man, it's almost December. Oh, man, the snow. Oh,
yes. Just, love it.
I don't understand how you like
Are
the
you
snow,
kidding man. Me? I woke up yesterday like a kid in a candy store, walked outside, snow all over the place. But the best part about the snow, AK, was it was a mild day outside. It wasn't freezing cold. It's like I was barbecuing yesterday in the snow. It was amazing. It was absolutely Spadooch. Amazing.
Spadooch
right
yesterday?
Spadooch, yeah.
Oh, jealous.
Yep. Damn
Very
right.
Jealous. Very yes. jealous. Well, it wasn't only the Leafs that did some work over
Packed
the course of the weekend.
Of news.
The Toronto Blue Jays made a huge signing last night, or at least reportedly agreed to terms with a really, really good pitcher. And we'll have Steve Phillips joining us at 6:30. Of course, we're talking about Kevin Gausman, now formerly of the San Francisco Giants. And Coco, that's a name we've talked a lot about over the past
couple
weeks.
You've been a big fan of this guy for months.
I have indeed. The Raptors played the Boston Celtics, the 20 fingers game, we call it. 20 fingers, our technical producer, in attendance. And we talk about the Koliakovo curse on this program. It might be the 20 fingers curse, because when that man is in the building, the Raptors never win. I will say, you know, playing without OG Anunoby, without Gary Trent, without Ken Birch, you're not going to win too many basketball games for the Toronto Raptors. But we'll talk about that. The Montreal Canadiens, the NFL weekend that was. Brendan Lemieux bites Brady Tkachuk, Matt Murray, Evander Kane, Marcus Semien, he's gone. The CFL playoffs.
All right, stop! Stop!
There's a lot to get to.
You're filling up my brain overload right now. But we'll get to all of it in the next 4 hours.
This hour, first up, brought to you by Sokolov Lawyers. Seriously injured? Don't put it off. Call Sokolov. Visit ruhurt.ca.
They only get paid when you do.
Indeed. And we'll talk about the newest member of the Toronto Blue Jays with Steve Phillips in about 15 minutes' time. Big news there. And another, it's now former member of the Toronto Blue Jays, is Marcus Semien, who signed a 7-year deal worth $175 million with the Texas Rangers yesterday. So congrats to him. Bet on yourself, folks. It pays off, clearly, for Marcus Semien. That is what
Pete Walker should be getting a raise, too.
Well, yeah, with Robbie Ray, for sure. And I imagine Pete Walker and Kevin
Gaudman.
Mm-hmm.
Steven Matz. You know, it's a couple of Blue Jays have been getting paid. And look, I don't think anybody's surprised to see the money that Semien got. I think to me, when I saw this, I was more surprised about the place he chose to get paid that money. The Texas Rangers, a team that nobody really talked about as a legitimate contender for Marcus Semien. And, you know, I guess because they moved to the 7th year of the deal, people expected maybe 5 years, maybe 6 years. Well, out of nowhere, he scores a 7-year deal with the Texas Rangers, and good on him. Look, this is a guy that's been one of the best producing baseball players in the last 3 years in the major leagues, and finally paid off.
And yeah, exactly. I don't think the Jays were ever going to 7 years on Marcus Semien. I mean, that would take him to his...
Not on a 31-year-old.
38 season? Like, come on. That's not a wise investment. I think Robbie Ray is going to be a very similar move. And again, we'll talk about all the baseball stuff with Steve Phillips. There's a lot to get to with him. Not to mention, the CBA expires in, what, 48 hours with the with Major League Baseball, which could very well prompt a ton of action. Because once you're locked out, you can't sign any deals. So there's a lot of players who are like, all right, whatever, let's do something quickly. And I imagine the Jays
are in. Deal now.
And I imagine the Jays are in on a number of middle infielders considering Semien's loss. Remember, keep in mind, he hit 45 home runs last year. That's not easy production to replace. And I'm certain the Toronto Blue Jays will be very aggressive in trying to do just that. The Montreal Canadiens. And listen, it's been an awful season
for
Montreal
this weekend.
I mean, firing base, a cleaning house. They cleaned house. Mark Bergevin, he's out. Assistant GM Trevor Timmons, who runs their draft, he's out. They even fired their PR guy. They're just like, all right,
get out of here. Here, see you later.
Yeah. So, and also Scott Mellenby, another one of their assistant GMs. Fired as well, or I guess he resigned. Yeah,
yes.
Well, he wanted the job that ultimately Jeff Gorton got. Jeff Gorton, the former general manager of the New York Rangers. And the most fascinating thing for me about the Montreal Canadiens is how they are unwilling to hire a general manager unless he or she is bilingual. And there's a lot of debate. It's a very divisive subject, especially in the city of Montreal. As you're aware, Coco, I have a bunch of friends who are huge Habs fans, and they hate this idea. They hate it. It's a very simple process when you're talking about meritocracy, like who deserves the job the most. And if you're making a decision based on what language you speak, are you really getting the best candidates? So that's something that the Habs are doing. I mean, Gorton, I suppose, will be their general manager, right? He will be making all the hockey-related decisions, but you're going to have someone in there, and in that title at least, who is going to be bilingual, and that's an important thing for the Montreal Canadiens franchise. And I'm from Toronto. I'm not a guy from Montreal. I don't speak French, but to me, winning should be paramount.
No, and it absolutely should be. And look, you can't sit here and argue against what the Canadians are trying to do to appease their fan base. Clearly, you know, they're a team that, you know, that has two languages in the city that they play in. And obviously French being, you know, a dominant language, and, you know, they have to consider that with all of their options. But look, we live in the age of 2021 where, you know, the sports has evolved, the world has evolved, and it just seems like the decision making of the Montreal Canadiens hasn't evolved either. And you're absolutely right about, you know, the difficulty behind having to, you know, to stick with those, that type of rule is now you're limiting your options because there's only a few guys that are available that one either meet the criteria or have the resume that you want or need to replace a guy like Mark Bergevin to come in and have immediate credibility and have the impact that, or you know, have the ability to make the impact that you desire. So I think everything that I've read so far, and there's a lot of reports out there, and we can get into it with Darren Dreger or even Tony Marinaro, who joins us later on in the show, because he's been very passionate about his beliefs in regards to the bilingual decision that the Montreal Canadiens factor in. But there's belief out there that right now that the approach the Montreal Canadiens are taking with this hire of Jeff Gorton and the title he was given, president of hockey ops, is they're sort of reshuffling things without ruffling the feathers within the fan base, where Jeff Gorton is the guy that they envision being the general manager, but instead of giving him the general manager role, they're going to give him the president of hockey ops, have him oversee everything, make the decisions, but then put somebody in place beneath him that could answer the questions to the public and act as acting general manager. Maybe a guy that they can groom, sort of what Jeff Gorton has been able to do with the Rangers with people like, you know, Chris Drury, who took over. They talked about his relationship with Daniel Briere, and I've heard other names like Matthew Darche, all French-speaking players. Maybe that's an approach that they're taking here. And like I said, we can get into this with Darren Dreger. He's dialed into it a little more than we are. But I was trying to think of candidates that may fit the mold of this, and immediately I said to myself, if the Montreal Canadiens are really smart, they'd interview Pierre LeBrun. Because think about the contacts and the knowledge that somebody like Pierre LeBrun has. The guy can speak fluent French too, right? And you're asking a guy to just come in there and answer to the fan base, not a guy necessarily being asked to make the hockey decisions, because it's going to be a guy like Jeff Gorton making those decisions.
Yeah, we can't lose Pierre LeBrun here at TSN. I thought you were going to say something completely different. I had no, Dave Poulin. Does Dave Poulin speak French?
No.
No. Poulin, I don't know. LeBrun is
Marty Perron would be not another good guy, right?
Yeah. LeBrun, we're sticking with LeBrun. Yeah. We're not with that. Yeah, I'm very taken aback by the LeBrun suggestion. I was thinking you play with Daniel Briere, no, in Philly?
I did not know.
Oh, okay. Oh, he's a top candidate. Yeah. Matthew Darche of the Tampa Bay Lightning. I've not seen Pierre LeBrun's name mentioned in any of the reports.
Well, obviously, I've...
was that a joke, or I can't tell?
Of course it was a joke.
Okay. I thought you were being serious. I don't know.
I was laughing when I said it.
I was going to call you a brickhead, like Brady Kachuk called you. Like, oh, Pierre, what? All right, well, I'm not gonna make any jokes about LeBron. LeBron's the man. We love Pierre. We can't lose him at TSN.
Of course he's the man.
A very valuable contributor and a Cowboys fan to boot.
So the timing of all this news is obviously unprecedented right now, because I don't think owner Jeff Molson was prepared to take these steps, but obviously, the decision by Scott Mellenby, during Saturday's game, is what spearheaded the push behind all this. And dude, I tell you one thing, I've been doing a lot of the Montreal Canadiens game as an analyst. I did their game Friday night against Buffalo, and it was the most unspirited effort I've seen in an NHL hockey team than I've seen in a long time in any game that I've watched and any game that I covered. That team is an absolute mess. And I don't know if it's Mark Bergevin to blame, if it's the coaching staff to blame. It's clearly the players are part of the blame, because it doesn't matter if you're if you have injuries, you're going through a rough time. At the end of the day, you're playing in the NHL, and that's the pride you should always represent. And that Montreal Canadiens team just looks completely lost, completely, you know, just they're lost. They are.
We should have seen this coming.
I can't believe the effort that they responded on Saturday. Well, Jake Allen needed to make 48 saves for them to come out with a victory, but it was crazy. And hopefully this is something that will light a spark under that group there, because it's been a mess.
I mentioned the word brickhead, and Brady Tkachuk was bit by Brendan Lemieux on Saturday night, and some incredible audio from Brady. Yeah. Like, some of the best stuff.
Doesn't hold back at all, eh?
And we'll see. Brendan Lemieux has a in-person hearing via Zoom, so it's not in person, but it is via Zoom. So that means he could be suspended for up to or five games or more.
Minimum. He's getting minimum five.
He's getting minimum five games. So that's going to be tough. I tried to come up with a play on words, but biting. But anyways, yeah, Brendan Lemieux in some hot water, and deservedly so. Biting, come on, man. What are you doing? And Brady Tkachuk was like bleeding. Like, you could see he's like bit by a rabid dog. Like, I don't know. It's not cool. Matt Murray placed on waivers. Wow, that was a great signing by the Ottawa Senators. And man, they really the days of losing are now in the rear view in Ottawa. Yeah. They have really moved forward and are
apparently the rebuild is not over.
The rebuild is far from over in Ottawa, and is far from over with the Toronto Blue Jays. They are just getting going, signing Kevin Gausman. What's next for the Jays? Is Robbie Ray still a possibility for Toronto? We'll ask our MLB insider, Steve Phillips, when he joins us next. First Up continues here on TSN 1050. Aaron Karolnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you. Major League Baseball free agency is red hot right now. Some big tickets being handed out by many teams, including your Toronto Blue Jays, who yesterday agreed to terms on a five-year deal worth $110 million with Kevin Gausman. And our MLB insider, Steve Phillips, joins us now to discuss. What's going on, Steve?
Good morning. Good to be with you guys.
Great to have you as always, my man. So run us through the Kevin Gausman scouting report from the mind of Steve Phillips. What are the Jays getting, and what did you make of that acquisition?
So first, I think that he was plan B to Robbie Ray. And you think, well, geez, why did they sign him if Robbie Ray's still out there? Because, you know, if Gausman went away, you know, when you're a general manager, you have parallel negotiations going on for plans A, B, C, D, and E. And at some point, you have to make a decision on plan B if plan A is dragging on a little bit. And it seems like without Robbie Ray signing, and, you know, there didn't seem to be as many reports about the timing for him, I think they looked at it and said, we like Gausman just about as much as we like Robbie Ray. We like the deal relative. Now, it's a lot of money, $5 at $110, but it's less than what I thought he would get, Gausman. I thought he might get up to $120-$125 million. That I think they decided, look, we don't want to lose out on plan A and B. And if B goes off the board and Robbie Ray ends up going somewhere else, then what do we do? So I think getting the deal done was the smart move. And he is a right-handed Robbie Ray in a lot of ways, in that he was a guy that had some struggles early on in his career.
And then he played for Baltimore, so you can't blame him.
Right. And so he struggled. Then he went to Atlanta. And then he went to Cincinnati, and then he went to San Francisco. And in the short season in San Francisco, he started to figure out with the analytics department that they have there, and they do a great job there in San Francisco, that he can throw his fastball. And he scrapped the two-seam fastball and decided to go only four-seam fastballs in the top of the zone. So he can throw 96, 97, 98. Top of the zone as a right-hander. And then instead of the wipeout slider like Gausman, he actually scrapped his slider and he goes to the split and the changeup. And in Major League Baseball this year, there's only one pitcher that got more than 240 swings and misses on a single pitch. And it was Gausman, who got 272 swings and misses on his split finger fastball.
Wow.
It is a really good pitch. He also throws a changeup that he throws down to the zone. It's similar to the split, but has a little different velocity, a little different break to it. And so it's an effective third pitch for him as well. I like him. He's a competitive guy, a good teammate. He'll fit in well. And if not Robbie Ray, it's a real nice option for a guy who's figured out who he is with really good stuff. And so he should age well. He'll pitch at 31. He turns 31 in January. I think that for the next 5 years, I think they got themselves a solid number two type starter overall.
Steve, are you convinced that this is the end to Robbie Ray, or is this just plan B, what you said? Because according to multiple reports, Robbie Ray is still not close to making his decision. He's obviously meeting with the Angels, who is, most people believe is his top suitor, but they have yet to meet. So with the Blue Jays getting to their own business, do you think they still have room to add a guy like Robbie Ray?
I think it's unlikely that they do it, but, I think as much as anything, because, at this stage, with Ryu, with Gausman, with Manoah, with Pearson, in Barrios, I don't know that they want to spend that much and lock up that much long-term money for another starting pitcher. And so my sense is they'll probably go for the next Robbie Ray, finding somebody who they might like. I think they need to add more pitching. I don't know if it'll be the impact. They've got to figure out what they're going to do at second base, what they're going to do at third base, and whether it'll be, because I think Biggio showed last year he's really not a third baseman. He didn't look comfortable there. I know the injuries were a factor. Just never looked comfortable at third. But I think his left-handed bat should be in there somewhere. And I think they may, I personally would love to see them go after a Seager or a Trevor Story. I don't think that's going to happen either. And so I think it's more of a Kyle Seager at third base, who's a 30 homer guy in his career, a little older now, but a really solid teammate. He's one of the leaders in Seattle for years, who could be a left-handed bat, play some third base. I prefer Espinal to be the super sub instead of a starter at third. And so I think they're going to probably spread some money around now to the rest of the field instead of going, all their eggs in another big basket. But look, they're still going to be a very competitive team, and they're not losing a lot. I mean, Robbie Ray was great last year, and Gausman didn't pitch as well as Ray, but he's a really solid pitcher, and I think can handle, and he's pitched in the American League East before too, which is a nice bonus. So I do like him in the rotation.
In conversation with our MLB insider, Steve Phillips, the Toronto Blue Jays, in agreement with Kevin Gausman, formerly of the Giants, on a five-year deal worth $110 million. Now, Steve, that's just one of the big deals that was reported yesterday. Marcus Semien signing with the Texas Rangers, a seven-year deal worth $175 million. So that ends his tenure with the Toronto Blue Jays. You mentioned them trying to find a replacement at second base for him. When you saw the Semien deal come down, what was your reaction?
Well, I wasn't surprised at the annual average value, the $25 million per year. I was just surprised at the 7 years. And that's where agents make their money. It's when a player's performance, you can pretty much line up how much dollars per year where the player falls in, where the agent makes his money and does his work for the player is to get the extra years added on the deal. And I'm surprised, at 31, that this went to a seven-year deal for a team that, look, Texas was going to have to overpay to get players because they weren't saying, hey, yeah, I think they've got a chance to win there. Simeon's going there with the idea that maybe in the next 2 or 3 years they could start to turn things around and be more competitive. They're not that close. Now, there's talk that they may still be in on Story and or Seager. So we'll see. But I'm not surprised Semien signed when he did. He heard an offer he didn't think he would get at 7 years. And Scott Boras, picked him up as a client this offseason. And that's where Boras makes his money, as he gets those extra years in the deal. So a bit of a surprise, and it now makes you wonder whether Texas is still in for another infielder and what that does to set the market for where the other guys may end up going.
Yeah, no, it's a nice little Christmas gift that Marcus Semien received, and it all started when he hired Scott Boras. You knew what his intention was going to be. And look, Texas is a place with no state tax, so clearly he's maximized
right on
his earnings as well, too. Well, a lot of other activity around the major leagues yesterday, and there was a report late last night that Max Scherzer could potentially be ending up with the Mets. Can you confirm or at least give us an update on where the Max Scherzer, bidding is right now with what team he's deciding on?
Yeah, it seems like it's the Angels and the Mets. And the Mets are at either 3 years or potentially 4 years at $42 million per year.
Yeah,
so it's a pretty extraordinary deal for an extraordinary pitcher. And, you know, it seemed all along like the West Coast was going to be the preference for Scherzer. He's from out there. He does have, they went to the Dodgers. He enjoyed that. The Giants, the Angels all seem to have some level of interest in him. But Scherzer did just build a house in Jupiter, Florida, which is just south of Port St. Lucie, Florida. And so there could be some tie-in there and some connection. And the Mets, you know, it's really weird. So, you know, the Mets lost out on Steven Matz.
Yeah.
And their plan B was Scherzer. So they lost out on the guy who got about $14 million a year to go for the guy who's going to make $42 million a year. I think that Steve Cohen's got to understand plan Bs are usually a step back, not right. Two or three or four steps forward. But the Mets are in it, man. I mean, I tell you, they spent a ton of money over the weekend. They got Eduardo Escobar, who, oh, by the way, was, I think, the perfect fit for the Blue Jays. He, without Simeon, Eduardo Escobar, you know, switch hits, he plays second and third. He would have been a great fit for the Jays, but the Mets popped him early. I think two at about $20 million total, two times 10. Then they got Starling Marte, that free agent center fielder that can, you know, 45 stolen bases last year. Then the Mets got Mark Canna from Oakland, who had a really good season, 29 home runs last year and played as a more regular player. And so the Mets are spending money. Their payroll is already over $200 million,
wow.
And they may add another 42. So Steve Cohen, the owner there, who listen, he has a $93 million sterling silver rabbit in his yard.
Same.
So, like, when you have, you have one of those, you can afford the $42 million. Remember, they're paying Robbie Cano. They've got Robbie Cano for two more years at $24 million per year.
Jeez.
After the PED, his second PED suspension. Yeah.
Is Robbie Cano even playing still?
What's that?
Is Robbie Cano even playing still?
Well, he was suspended all year last year for PEDs, and now he's coming back again with 2 years remaining on the deal. And a deal in which they gave up Jared Kelnick and is the main player going to Seattle, and Kelnick's going to be a big part of their team this year.
Wow, that's that rabbit you spoke of, man. I need to look up that story because that's fascinating to me. Quickly, I want to talk about what's going on at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time on December 1st, where Major League Baseball's owners are expected to lock out the players. Now, if that does indeed happen, we all assume that to be the case. How crazy could the next 48 hours or so be, Steve, considering once the lockout begins, you can't sign a contract? So do you expect just a crazy number of signings and trades to go down in the next couple of days?
Yeah, I do. I think more free agent signings than anything else. And remember, I think today's probably the busy day because, what you do with the players, you make an agreement pending a physical, and you got to get the physical done, too, before the player signs. So I think today is going to be the really crazy day because players will agree, then go to the physical tomorrow to get the deal done in time for the first. And so, yeah, I think the next 48 hours, we're going to hear all kinds of reports. Deals will finally get done after the physicals. Players who might normally sort of take a few days to get somewhere to give a physical will be rushing to turn their head and cough for doctors everywhere just so they can get that physical completed. But I do think that, it's going to be nuts. It's really going to be nuts. I think that we'll see Seager come off the board, Scherzer come off the board, potentially Correa come off the board. Baez, I think, remains to be seen a little bit. We saw the Buxton extension. We saw Sandy Alcantara's extension with the Marlins. I mean, here's the thing. I did a SportsCenter hit last night, and I wore a green tie because people are throwing money around. I figured that green was the appropriate tie to go with
yesterday.
Because everybody is spending money.
Well, yeah, wear the green suit today, not the tie.
Yeah, exactly. Pretend it's the Masters. That's what I would suggest. I'm looking at this inflatable bunny. 3 feet tall, stainless steel. No, $92 million? Or no, sorry, just $91 million. That's Steve Cohen.
$91 million, yep.
$91, my bad. Way, Jeff Koons.
That's what we spent on Mike Piazza when I was Mets GM. We gave him a seven-year deal, one of the biggest deals in baseball. I think it was seven at $91 or $93 million. Who knew?
Times have changed.
Here's what you have. On one side, you can get Piazza. On the other side, you get the sterling silver bunny. So take your pick. What do you want?
It's close. Well, Jeff Koons, I mean, he makes some great sculptures. And whether or not they're worth $91 million, we'll see how it all plays out for
beauty
our man.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, Aaron, in art. Carlo will tell you that. He's big into art. You know, he goes to museums all
the time.
You know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Art. You've got to sort of look into the piece to really sort of understand the artist and what they're trying to accomplish.
Steve, one of my dumbest things I've ever spent money on in my life was I went to Vegas on a bachelor party and I walked into an art museum and I spent $10,000 on a painting.
Don't ask why. Wait, first of all, why in the world, if you're in Vegas, are you going to an art museum? I mean, that's
exactly.
the first thing that,
exactly.
that I don't really understand.
Yeah.
And then buying art for $10,000.
Apparently, it had diamonds in it, and it was worth a lot.
Apparently, don't get it verified.
Well, it does. It does have diamonds.
Okay.
In it, but
where is it right now?
No idea.
Oh, okay. If I paid $10,000 or something, I would probably know where it is. But that's why you played 14 years in the NHL. Steve, thank you very much for doing this. I imagine you'll be a very, very busy man, very busy analyst on TSN.ca, TSN Radio, everywhere TSN in the next 48 hours or so. So thank you for taking the time.
You bet. My pleasure, guys. Have a great day.
See you, Steve.
All right. That is our baseball insider, baseball analyst, Steve Phillips. Man, it's going to be crazy in Major League Baseball
it
the next
is.
Couple of days because they want to get those deals in. It is indeed free agent frenzy, which is, it's the old adage, right? Deadlines spur action, and there's a deadline. It's December 1st at 11:59 p.m., and Steve intimated that the whole physical thing is another deadline. They got to get it done today because they got to get wherever they need to go and get their physical so they can have that contract signed off on. So you're going to see Scherzer and Kershaw and Seager and all these big name, Robbie Ray, big name free agents, perhaps sign new deals today. So it should be a crazy day in Major League Baseball. But, man, that's not the only story going on in the sports world. We're talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs, who have won 14 of their last 16 games, sweeping the California trip. And the Toronto Raptors, not as exciting as far as the news cycle goes. A couple of losses in a row and some injury concerns to boot. So we'll fill you in on the Raptor story next on First Up. Feeling good on this Monday morning here on First Up. Aaron Korolnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you and Coco. The Toronto Raptors, I mean, when you go into a game against anybody without OG Anunoby and Gary Trent and Cam Birch, it's going to be difficult, but especially against a team like the Boston Celtics, who the Raptors have had issues with in the past. I mean, Boston's a really good team, and they haven't had the greatest of starts, but you look at last night, or yesterday afternoon, I should say, and it was a tough one for the Raps. I mean, producing offense without guys like the aforementioned Trent and Anunoby was always going to be difficult, and when you had Fred VanVleet off the floor and Pascal Siakam off the floor, and some of the dudes they were bringing in who we haven't seen very much of, a lot of Raptors 905 contingent, the result like yesterday is to be expected. And also the Goran Dragic situation is something we're tracking as well, and does not sound like he'll be back with the Raptors anytime soon, if at all. So lots of news in Raptorland. Jack Armstrong will join us at 9:30. But when you saw what happened yesterday against the Celtics, a 109-97 loss at home, probably to be expected.
Well, look, I mean, you look at where they are in their schedule, right? They just came off a season-high six-game road trip, and there's always that narrative of, coming back off a long road trip, you're going to be sluggish in your first game back. And clearly we saw that play itself out with the Raptors yesterday, especially, missing the guys that they're missing. And I think, coming into this season, you knew this Raptors team was going to struggle to score offensively. But what we didn't expect is for them to be this bad defensively. And I think this has been something that has been their own worst enemy is, maybe they're trying to play above expectations so much because they want to succeed and want to have, you know, some success early on in this season, that, you know, they're getting themselves caught in the games where, you know, when they're not focusing on the defensive end and they're not scoring, they're suffering lopsided losses. And I think for me, the surprising thing is, you know, all the talk about returning home back to Scotiabank Arena, and, you know, Masai Ujiri was saying that, you know, that was one of the things that hurt them the most last year was playing in Tampa. They're 2-7 at home in their last
in their
9 games, and
it's crazy.
They play 16 of their next 20 at home, you know, including 9 out of their next 10. So if they want to make waves in this season, that's where it has to start. Their home record has to get a lot better. Obviously, they have to get guys back like OG and Gary Gent Jr. It's tough when you're missing both of those guys because, you know, I think they've shown early on this season that they could probably withstand one of those guys being out of the lineup because the other guy will probably make up for it offensively. But when you have both of those guys out of the lineup, not only are you missing them on the defensive end, but on the offensive end too, but this Raptors team just doesn't seem to make excuses. They played hard. They're just, right now, you can just see they're not good enough right now to win games.
And that's exactly it. You're talking about almost 38 points per game out of the lineup with Trent and Anobi out, and you're seeing like a lot of guys like Svi Mykhailiuk. We love Svi, but you know, if he's playing 37 minutes for you, that is a very bad sign about the state of your roster. And listen, Scotty Barnes, he was pulled really quickly yesterday.
Yeah, he had sent a message.
he committed a couple of bad turnovers really early in the game. Nick Nurse pulls him, and Scotty Barnes comes out in his return from that quick benching, very quick. He scores 21.7 boards. He took 9 threes. Scotty Barnes went full Steph Curry. He made 4 of them. And this is a narrative that's been surrounding Scotty Barnes for a couple of weeks now. Nick Nurse is really trying to get him to shoot more threes, and man, did he ever take that to heart last night? I mean, 9 three-point attempts for Scotty Barnes, and never even close to getting to that number before. So that's just the continued expansion of the rookie's game, and you got to love what you see from Scotty Barnes and his ability to bounce back, and also his attire post-game. Man, was he bundled up. He is ready for winter here in the city of Toronto, you know, coming from Florida State. Probably not used to it wasn't that cold yesterday. I mean, the snow.
It was beautiful yesterday outside. It was like 4 degrees.
Yeah.
I'm not a
fan of the snow, personally. I hate the snow. I don't understand how one could enjoy it, but that's just me. And there's a lot of people. I even see on Instagram, everybody, first snowfall, it's so beautiful. And I'm like, no.
It's what you grew up with, man. So, you're used to it. Most people that enjoy the outdoors. Like, this week we're supposed to get, you know, a ton of snow as well, too, but
really?
Mild temperatures.
No. Yeah. Hopefully,
you know, which is great.
Well, definitely football weather in the snow, right? That's another one. And then CFL yesterday, there was some snow in Hamilton as they beat the Montreal Alouettes. The Argos will host Hamilton in the East Final on Sunday afternoon. Battle of QEW, that should be a lot of
revenge fun. Game, as you'd like to say.
I don't know. I mean, the Argos beat Hamilton the last time they played. So, yeah, Hamilton looking for revenge for sure. And in Calgary and Saskatchewan, that was a wild game as well. But coming up on the other side, we'll talk about the NFL weekend that was. And, man, the New England Patriots, you used the term wagon. Are they a wagon or what? They cannot be stopped. And I think every team in the AFC has to look at New England right now as perhaps the best team in the conference. So that's coming up. Karolnik and Koliakovo here on First Up, TSN 1050. The New England Patriots just crushed the Tennessee Titans yesterday, 36-13, setting the scene for Monday night. The Pats at the Bills.
Yes.
And if there's a game of the year, well, there is. It's that game. There's no doubt about it. The Bills installed as 3-point favorites. So basically the books are saying on a neutral field, these two teams are even. I cannot wait for that game. Coco, where are our seats?
Hopefully we'll find out this week. But working on potentially getting us at the crew at the game.
Bang!
Cheering on the Bills. No Pats fans allowed. But
exactly.
Look, you talk about game of the year, and as good as the Patriots have been, the Bills suffered a devastating loss last week when Tre'Davious White suffered an ACL injury and is out for the year. So that's a major hole to fill on their defense, who has been, you know, the best defense in the league throughout 12 weeks of the season. So, you know, it's going to be a great game. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the division, the leader in the division is up for grabs. And, you know, as good as the Patriots have been, I think they're winners of, what, 7 in a row right now? Or 8-6 in a row?
They have a plus 148 point differential over their last six games. 148. They are destroying teams week after week. Mac Jones looks awesome. I think he's got to be the favorite now to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. And
for sure.
The fact that the Patriots were able to get that kid at number 15, not have to trade up and use assets like San Fran did to get Trey Lance. And wow, what a tremendous, tremendous stroke of luck for Belichick and company. They found a good one at Mac Jones, and man, their defense looks great. Their run game is rolling. That team is, as I said before, an absolute wagon. But so are the Toronto Maple Leafs, winners of 14 of their last 16. We'll get into what happened last night in Anaheim to close out the California road trip. And our TSN Hockey Insider with a early edition of Leafs Breakfast. It's Darren Dreger at 7:20. That's all coming up on First Up.